was, what does Rebbe think? Does Rebbe think there's a value in Hashkafa of having taken a perspective on current events, such as like the hostage deal?
There's certainly value on one level. That there's value because it's without Chas v'Shalom implying any kind of clinical detachment, Rachmana Litzlan, and lack of complete, you know, involvement and identification with what's happening, that it's a sugya in Torah, and a person should know what's right al pi Torah, what's wrong al pi Torah. Even if he's not the one who's in a position to make that determination, that a person still should know what's right and what's wrong al pi Torah, even if he's not the one who's calling the shots. If a person is a Ben Eretz Yisrael and is a vote, has voting rights in Eretz Yisrael, so it's certainly something which is, you know, relevant to what he takes into account in deciding who to vote for. So I think a person is supposed to have to try to know what the Torah's perspective is. I don't think a person in general, with anything in life, a person is also always, you know, supposed to try to be productively engaged in whatever the issue at hand is. Sometimes we feel that we should be engaged, or we have a Yetzer Hara to be engaged, or sometimes it's a Yetzer HaTov, which is misdirected, to be engaged, even when it's not productive to do so. If we know someone who's not well or something, Rachmana Litzlan, who's going through hard times, so we absolutely should be involved to the extent that whatever we can be doing and should be doing to help and to reach out, but to sort of just feel badly beyond that, where it's not productive, the person is supposed to be productively engaged. So here too, there's such a thing as being, you know, not productively engaged. And there's a point at which it's not Talmud Torah, at which it's hacking, you know, and then we're not talking about the we're not talking about that.
What are some of the key and core values that are given over at Yeshiva University that you wouldn't necessarily get somewhere else?
So maybe we'll reword the question a little bit. I'm at YU. I've been there for many, many years, Baruch Hashem. So I'll talk about what I know, and if anyone is in a position to, and it's productive for them, they can use that and apply that to draw whatever distinctions and differentiations are helpful in their context. There are many, I think, elements of the hashkafa, the approach to Torah life, which one can be mekabel and are reinforced throughout one's years in YU. Avodas Hashem requires balance. It requires balance even within Torah and mitzvahs, to know for what mitzvah a person is supposed to be mafsek Talmud Torah and for what mitzvah is not. The fact that on a hierarchy we're told that Talmud Torah is keneged kulam, the fact that v'chol chafetzecha lo yashvu ba, and yet there are mitzvahs when a person is mechuyav to be mafsek Talmud Torah. So it's not as simple as just saying, well, Talmud Torah keneged kulam, so therefore nothing can ever justify stepping out of the Beis Medrash. No. If it's a mitzvah she'ef, shall I also say they're cherim, for instance, so then a person is mechuyav to be mafsik his Talmud Torah. So religious life, Avodas Hashem, on the one hand, a person is single-minded. He's single-minded in that he's committed to, he's devoted to, he's dedicated to doing Ritzon Hashem. But Ritzon Hashem itself at times points in this direction, and at other times it points in another direction. Again, not because Chas V'Shalom is, obviously that's totally consistent and totally holistic, but Ritzon Hashem isn't monolithic in the sense that it always translates into Talmud Torah, that it always translates into this mitzvah or that mitzvah. Tzad Hashem is sufficiently broad that it requires that a person live a life of balance, and a person has to know how to balance, again, Talmud Torah with other mitzvahs. A person has to know how to balance Talmud Torah with the Ofer Talmud Torah im derech eretz she'egiya shneim hashkachos avon. A person has to know how to balance those two, within his own life, depending upon a person's kochas hanefesh, a person has to figure out what the balance is between Talmud Torah and other mitzvahs. I think in the Simcha Raz writes in his collection of stories about Rav Aryeh Levine, that how did Rav Aryeh Levine become the rav of all the prisoners under the British mandate? So at the time, Rav Kook, who was the first chief rabbi, was approached by the British that they wanted to have a Jewish chaplain. They didn't want a Jewish chaplain, not out of concerns for the welfare of the prisoners. They thought that if they kept them somewhat happy, so that they would cause them less trouble. There was no, this wasn't an act of altruism on their part. So they approached Rav Kook in his capacity as chief rabbi that he should recommend someone. And he was the one who recommended Rav Aryeh Levine. Why did he recommend Rav Aryeh Levine? Because Rav Kook, this is the way the story is presented there, that Rav Kook saw that was the tikkun, that was the way Rav Aryeh Levine, the way his nefesh, the way his neshama was going to achieve its perfection. So one wonders, you know, what optometrist Rav Kook went to and where he, you know, where he got his glasses, and if one could, you know, buy a pair of glasses like that. But so we're all different. So even clearly, Rav Aryeh Levine, okay, so he didn't stop learning, but he obviously didn't learn as much as if he wouldn't have that, you know, tremendous, you know, devotion and dedication that he showed to all these prisoners. It obviously came, there's only 24 hours in the day, even for a big tzaddik, there's only 24 hours in the day. So depending upon a person's kochas and nefesh also. So Avodas Hashem is a life of balance. again, balance within Torah and mitzvahs, balance between Torah and making hishtadlus for parnosa, balance between ben adam lechaver, ben adam lamokom, etc. Balance in so many areas. One of the things that we try to transmit is that hashkofa of a person has a single-minded focus and a single commitment to do Ritzon Hashem, but that gufa requires that a person lead a balanced life, a balanced life between intensity and between mu'ud and mabrius. Wherever you turn, everything in Yahadus is a balance. If you very well, you know, very likely might get it in one shir. Maybe if for some reason you didn't get it in one shir, you'll have to listen to two shir. But if you hear Rav Shachter give a shir, so you'll hear everyone quoted, again, in terms of the political religious spectrum, everyone quoted from Rav Kook to the Minchas Halasim. And you'll hear Chachmei Yisrael from across the spectrum quoted. So obviously, in life, a person has to follow a certain derech. There are different drachim within Torah, within the contemporary Olam HaTorah, there are different drachim, and a person follows a particular derech. The fact that a person follows a particular derech doesn't mean that he doesn't recognize and that he doesn't respect those who are legitimate gedolim, who don't necessarily represent that derech. You don't have to follow the Minchas Halazos hashkofes or shitas to recognize that the Minchas Halazos was an Odom Gol. You don't have to follow all of Rav Kook's hashkofes or shitas to recognize what a gadol he was. And there's an openness that there isn't a political litmus test. There's a Torah test for gadlus. There isn't a political litmus test for godless. That kind of openness to the whole spectrum of Talmidei Chachamim, I think, is another element of the hashkofa. The openness to chachma. Chachma shouldn't be understood synonymously with contemporary culture. Unfortunately, you know, contemporary culture is less and less about chachma and more about craziness. So sometimes for chachma you have to go back a little bit in history. You can't so much look in contemporary times. But the openness to chochma bagoyim is something which, in addition to its intrinsic value, it seems, I don't know that it has to be this way, but empirically it does seem to be this way. It doesn't need to be this way, but empirically it is this way. That often there's a correlation between a person having had a sound secular education and not being extreme in an unhealthy sense in his relationship with the outside world. For instance, when there are public health directives, so then a healthy, balanced approach says that even though one obviously filters out and rejects anything and everything from the outside world which is against Torah, which is not consistent with Torah, which is not compatible with Torah, but anything which is correct and anything which is valid and anything which we're supposed to also take into account what's said in the outside world, that a person doesn't just indiscriminately reject everything. That kind of balanced approach to the outside world what you reject and what you accept, it seems to correlate that usually B'nai Torah who have some secular education usually are more successful at striking that balance. Again, maybe the balance is reject 99.5% and accept 0.5%, but whatever the right balance is, you have to maintain that balance. I think in yeshiva, we try to recognize what the boundaries of rabbinic expertise and therefore authority are, and that people should be kofuf to what Rabbanim say in those areas, and that Rabbanim themselves should be mindful of not venturing outside of those areas. So in his day, when Rav Soloveitchik was asked, was it permissible to relinquish Shtachim if that would bring peace to Medinas Yisrael? So he used to answer that he thought that it was permissible, that if that would ensure peace, that it was permissible to relinquish Shtachim, but whether in fact that would be accomplished was something that needed to be assessed militarily and politically, and that you have to be a military and political expert to speak to, and that he was neither. So halacha lemaisa, he wouldn't say whether he was in favor of doing so. He said the conceptual halachic framework was that, yes, one would relinquish Shtachim if that would ensure peace. The Hitnatkut in Aza would be correct if it would have brought peace. But whether or not it's going to bring peace is something which isn't, that's already a political assessment. The same way, the halachic framework is, if there's a suffix akana, so the cholah shouldn't fast on Yom Kippur, is there a suffix sakana requires a medical assessment? So the doctor, the rav is an expert in halacha, and the doctor is an expert in medicine. The rav is an expert in halacha, and there are military people who, when their military judgment is not skewed by their own ideologies, are expert in military matters. And the same thing for politicians. So also they can potentially be expert in political matters. So that's a big yesod, that on the one hand, you know, to recognize the expertise and to be kofuf to rabbanim within the areas which are where the question is halachic, but when there are variables as part of the halachic shaila, which are non-halachic, the medical assessments, the military assessments, the political assessments, that isn't the expertise of a rav necessarily, and that he himself looks beyond that. That's also drawing those lines is also, I think, an element of the hashkafa that we seek to impart. I think that there are probably different approaches. There's probably a certain general approach to chinuch habonos. And again, I'm not talking about particulars of what the exact curriculum is, but whether the goal of chinuch habonos is also to part of their spiritual development is that's linked to intellectual development as well, I think is also a value that that most seek to transmit to their Talmidim as well. So those are not all the elements, but some of them.
What are some practical ways that we can work on our tefillah?
I think we're probably on schedule to violate this in a few minutes from now, so it makes me feel doubly uncomfortable in saying it. But you know. Most of us struggle with having kavana in tefillah. But many of us also just disregard what Chazal say is necessary to have kavana in tefillah, which is that Chazal tells us that we can't simply flip a switch, that you can't transition from, I don't know, some other involvement and then just all of a sudden get up and daven, that a person needs time to clear his mind from what he was doing beforehand and be ready to be Omed of Nehem Melech. You know, the same way, if you're in shape the way I am, you know, if you have to run up the steps to get to shul in time, so it's not until halfway through Shmon Esrei that you stop panting. And so even if you're in better shape, as you all are, better shape than that, but, you know, sort of psychologically or mentally, you know, we'll be in a similar position. So Chazal say that tefillah requires hachana. I'm not sure that how much attention we pay to that. So that's maybe one one response. Another response, again, neither of these is intended to be exhaustive, is that I think most, if not all of us, have had moments in our life when we feel that we did daven with kavana. And if you think back to what those moments were, so those moments were when we felt a very deep, pressing, urgent need. And then we did have kavana. So what does that show? It means that we are capable of kavana. It's not that, you know, living in hey tofshin pei hey, that most of us are no longer capable of kavana. No, we are capable. But what does it mean? It means that ordinarily when we daven, we don't really feel the need. It's just something that we're doing. It's just something on our schedule. It's just an obligation. But we don't experience the neediness. We don't experience the neediness. So then we sort of have to push ourselves to have kavana, as opposed to the kavana coming naturally. And when we experience need, so then the kavana is there naturally. So the Rambam has a very interesting phrase in Perek Aleph Hilchos Tefillah Halachot Beis, when he defines the derais of tefillah, he says that a person begins with shavach, and then he says, shoel either tzrachav or tzrachin, shehu tzarech lahen. He has this double lashon of, again, either tzrachin or tzrachav, either way the point is the same, shehu tzarech lahen. So it should be shoel tzrachav. What do you need the shehu tzarech lahen? So shoel tzrachav, it can be something purely objective. Objectively, a person needs health. Objectively, a person needs panasa. Shehu tzarech lahen means that the person feels the need. It's a verb. It's not just a noun. He feels, he experiences the need. Tefillah is about feeling and experiencing and being in touch with our dependence upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if we felt the neediness, so then kavana would be natural. But since we don't feel the neediness, so then kavana isn't natural, and that's why it's such a struggle. If we were more attuned to our absolute dependence upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore our neediness, so then presumably kavana would be something more natural.
How should we relate to machlokes?
How do you remember all these questions bad? You don't have a not have a picture? Oh, okay.
How should we relate to machloksim and machshava? For example, a machlokes between the Rambam and the Kuzari on a very fundamental nekuda and machshava. How should we be relating to it on a personal level?
Not every machlokas is one that trickles down to a personal level, and then you know the multiple opinions amongst the Chachmei Yisrael, amongst the Chachmei Masorah, have tremendously enriched our Masorah. Obviously, our Masorah is richer for having both the Rambam and Rabbi Yehuda Levi than it would be if we had, if you have to go to Desert Island. You know, I think that's, some interviewer had that gimmick or something. If you're going to go, what three books would you take with you? So we don't want to take only three books. We want to take our whole, if we're going to go to a Desert Island, we want to maybe just take your Bar Ilan, I guess. But you want to take everything. You don't want to choose between the Chovas HaLevavos and the Rambam and Rabbi Yehuda Levi. So the first thing I think is to recognize that the differences help enrich our Masorah. Now there are some differences in Machshav and in Hashkav which have very real applications, to sort of how a person reacts or processes things. I'm not sure that there's a formula. Sometimes, one view is more in the mainstream and the other view is, less so, in which case, obviously, that carries weight. But at other times, I don't know that there's a formula in terms of how a person's going to integrate it into his life.
Is there a particular aspect of Avodas Hashem
that Rabbi thinks Bnei Yeshiva should be more focused on? I have this bad habit when I get questions of sort of projecting, the questions about someone else, and I tend to, answer it in a self-centered way by projecting, and in that vein, so I would say, it's hard to talk about one element that needs attention. There are lots of elements. Someone gave me a copy. It's not really a book. It's more of a small monograph. It was written by the famous psychiatrist, by Dr. Abraham J. Tversky. So he was Ma'arich Yomim. I think he lived certainly into his 80s, maybe upper 80s. So when he was 80 years old, he wrote this little book. And such a beautiful title, When I Grow Up. So this is being written by an 80-year-old man who's had, by most, if not everyone's estimation, a very productive career in helping people and a very prolific author. And he writes, When I Grow Up. And the theme that he writes about, again, he writes very self-disparagingly, and therefore it should be taken with a grain of salt, obviously. He said, when I was a little boy, he said, I was insecure. He says, now I'm an old man of 80 and I'm still insecure. And when I was a little boy, I don't remember now anymore whether I'm quoting accurately, so I'm just sort of making up the examples. I'm not sure if I'm quoting anymore, but just to illustrate what his general point was. I craved attention and people's approval. And now at age 80, I still crave attention. And I still crave attention and look for people's approval. Kahena v'chahena. And his point is, you know, how many of us really change ourselves for the better in terms of character? How many people really change themselves for the better in terms of correcting flaws, in terms of addressing weaknesses? You know, the comment is known from Ibsal Salanter. Ibsal Salanter said it's easier to learn Shas than it is to be masak in one midah. You know, this was before all the English translations of Shas, before Schottenstein, so it wasn't that he thought that finishing Shas was going to be particularly easy when he said that. And you know, when one looks in the mirror, so what Rousseau said, it resonates. So does what Rabbi Dr. Abraham and J. Tversky said. At your age, you don't have much of a frame of reference here. I don't know how meaningful it is to look back at where you were 10 years ago and where you are today. And it isn't necessarily helpful to look at where you were 2 months ago and where you are today, because these kinds of changes require time. But it's certainly something to be mindful of. It requires really a daily commitment. If a person is aware of a midah that he has that needs to be addressed, so it requires slow, painstaking, consistent, relentless work to if a person is blessed to reach age 80, to aspire to write an essay now that I have grown up, as opposed to when I grow up. I think that's in the one. There are many other areas, but we'll highlight that one for now.
Is there a value in fitting into one particular box in Hashkafa?
Depends who designed the box. It depends what the alternative is to his being self-supporting. If a person has a relative, a friend, someone who's ready, willing, and able, and wants the support, on the one hand. On the other hand, by accepting the support, so this person is able to genuinely devote himself to teaching, to Habotzas Torah, in a way that otherwise he couldn't. and he's accomplishing. You know, as long as the Rambam's brother was alive, so the Rambam allowed his brother to support him. If it's something which the people, the person supporting, it's really a crushing load. It's a crushing load on the father-in-law, but he had to commit himself to it because otherwise he couldn't have married off his daughter. If it's that a person, Chas v'Shalom, thinks that there's a sense of entitlement, if he's not being especially productive and doesn't feel a sense of achrayus in accepting support, so then it's not such a healthy arrangement. You know, the starting point for the deliberation is that a person has a responsibility to make his status for panosa. That's the starting point for the deliberation, that a person has such a responsibility. Let's say he is someone who can make a very real contribution in chinuch, but in the short term he doesn't see how he's going to be able to pay the bills. And his parents or his in-laws have the resources and they want to partner with him in that. So that's beautiful. That's something very beautiful, and it's very appropriate to accept the help. Now, whether or not societally things should be structured that way is a different story. But so it depends, you know, why the person is taking the support and what he's doing with it and what his attitude towards is it. What factor should one put into choosing a Rebbe? A Rebbe should teach you content of Torah, how to learn Torah, and how to live Torah. That's all. It doesn't do anything else. So mainly, you sort of look to see where you're going to get those things. Thank you, Alison.